I will open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for February 19th, 2016.
Did a quick calculation.
We have a relatively modest agenda this morning. That agenda will grow over the next week. We anticipate at least two full committees next week. So I will go to the first item on the agenda and open a work session on SB 1512 relating to seismic rehabilitation bonds. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Good morning, Committee. On February 16th, the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee voted to recommend passage of Senate Bill 1512. SB 1512 specifies that the proceeds of Article 9M and Article 9N general obligation bonds, which are issued to finance the seismic rehabilitation grant program in the Oregon Business Development Department, may be used to pay for surveying and engineering evaluations and to pay agency program administrative costs. General obligation bonds issued under Article 9Q have also been used to pay for agency program administrative costs in some instances. The administrative costs of the program are currently financed with lottery bonds. The bill provides the legislature with an additional option to finance the proper administration of the program. The co-chair's budget, however, continues to fully finance OBDD administrative costs with lottery funds for the remainder of the current biennium. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 1512 be reported out, do pass, and I hope that future ponies don't have Roman numerals in them this early in the morning.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As the carrier pointed out, the money derived from borrowed bonding proceeds to plan and implement seismic rehabilitation, including paying the cost of personnel, and services, and supplies. Colleagues, that means that this bill authorizes the use of borrowed bond money to pay for the cost of employees as well as services and supplies to be used by the agency to administer the grant program. We must not start down the slippery slope of reinterpreting our state constitution to authorize the use of borrowed money to pay for current services. If you have any questions in your mind about that, I suggest you go to your local banker and ask if he would be willing to provide a 25-year loan to pay for your current household expenses. This needs to be fixed. I urge a no vote on this.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to reiterate what the good senator just shared. Colleagues, in finance, there's a thing called sources and uses. And every loan has this statement. And what you do is you look at what's the uses of your money, and then you look at the sources of the money, and you match it up. And the notion that we're going to use bonds with a 20 to 25-year life expectancy for a use that is at best 90 days, maybe 180 days, is completely illogical. I think the work needs to be done. I think it's very, very important work. But I have to share with you, you couldn't get this by the most junior loan officer, the most junior loan officer at the most community of credit unions. This is not a good use of our money.
Yes, Representative Whitson.
I agree. I believe that borrowed money, the money should be used to actually do the retrofitting for the seismic upgrades, not for personnel. I think it needs to be on capital work on the building.
You're always doing nice things.
Additional comments? Yes.
I followed this same line of reasoning in committee, and it wasn't until some time later that it was explained to me that we do have precedent for doing this. We do it with Connect Oregon. I think that for the purposes of this deeply troubled program that has bounced from one place to another, getting started with the work has some value, but I very much agree with the preceding comments, and I think it's something that we need to come back and revisit. Originally, I think the program was designed to accommodate some kind of evaluation, assays of the situation prior to jumping into doing the work, and I was also concerned that projects would come expecting the state to do their due diligence. So this very much remains a work in progress, and Oregon Business Development Department got stuck with this program when it didn't work out in other agencies. But I think that this very much needs to have some refinement. I would support the bill today with all of the misgivings that I think are properly stated. But we've got to do something to get our arms around how this program is being administered and delivered. And the fact that it's so open-ended at the agency gives me some pause, although I think the agency has been responsible in trying to deal with a program that is not necessarily a perfect fit in their portfolio.
Okay, additional discussion. Senator Steiner.
Thank you. Senator Johnson, may I ask you a quick question? When you had testimony on this in Transportation Economic Development, was there any conversation about how the agency would account for what percentage of the bond proceeds would be used for reasonable expenses and what the tracking mechanism was going to be?
Very superficial conversation, and that was one of the issues that was raised. When does the administrative load overcome the work? I think that this is trying to implement what was intended early on when we talked. The lifeline just arrived.
Mr. Bender, so that we get a clear exploration of this, can you cite some examples? Because I know there are a multitude of examples. ODOT, even when you go away from Connect Oregon, uses bonding proceeds from revenue bonds in the development of projects, in the design and review of those projects, in the engineering of those projects. Those are costs directly related to the projects, just as putting out these grants is directly related to putting out these grants and determining who gets the money. You can't actually do grants without expending money to evaluate them. So,
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm Steve Bender with the Legislative Fiscal Office. I'd like to address your question and also Senator Steiner Hayward's question, if I may. There are other instances, as you mentioned, where the bond proceeds or portions of the bond proceeds are used to fund administrative costs. For example, bonds that have been issued for the e-court program in mortgage judicial department supports those proceeds. Portions of those have been supporting employees who have been involved with getting that system implemented for that agency. To address what I believe Senator Steiner Hayward's question, there was some discussion about this, my memory is, in subcommittee. The determination of what or how much of the bond proceeds could be used for administration would not be at the agency's discretion. That would be at the legislature's discretion, since when you approve a budget for the department, Business Oregon, Business Development Department, part of that would be approving the funding of the administration of that particular program. So the department under this legislation would have the option of requesting that bond proceeds be used to finance a proportion of the administrative expenses, but that could not occur without legislative approval.
I'll come back to you. And Ms. Bender, will you stay? Because I believe you may be needed. Senator Bates, and then back over to
you. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm glad Mr. Bender's here. When I read this, I thought of the kind of projects I've been involved with, where you're building a home, or I built two commercial buildings. And about 10 to 15% of the cost was site preparation. But before we could do that, we had to get an engineering on board, an architect on board. It was about 10 to 15% of the cost. And that's sort of a reasonable thing you think about when you do these things. If you don't do that first, you can't do anything else. You got to have the engineering done. You have to have the architect in there. The question I have now, since it's been brought up, is how much control does the legislature have over the actual amount of money being spent on these bonds? Are we talking spending 40-50% of the bonds to do what we need to do? Are we talking, 10-15%, somewhere in that neighborhood? Because that's what I've always seen as necessary for doing these things. And I often do these with a mortgage. You go to the bank and you set the mortgage up, and they're watching every step of the way, saying, is this much for this part of the project, this much for this part of the project right on through. So do we actually do that when we set the budget is a question I have.
Mr. Bender.
Senator Bates and committee members, Senate Bill 1512 does not in and of itself impose any limit on the proportion of the bonds that could be used for administration versus the proportion that would be distributed to schools and public emergency services facilities for the actual projects themselves. The bonds, in order to be issued and in order to maintain their tax-exempt status, are reviewed by bond counsel, that and any limits that are imposed, for example, by under Internal Revenue Code would be retained in that situation. The bill, though, does not specifically place any limitation on the proportion of the proceeds that could potentially be used for administrative costs at the agency.
Mr. Bender, can we go back to an earlier statement that you made that the legislature actually controls the amount of administrative cost, and also, I believe within their budget, we failed to when we approved this literally humongous appropriation or authorization for bond for seismic to actually provide them with resources to actually administer this, where I believe we are adding a few positions there, and I believe those are lottery funded at this time. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Co-Chair. The agency has requested two additional positions to address increased workload from the expanded bond program this biennium, and the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee heard a separate request, not for the one that's before you today, for to approve lottery funds to fund that, and upon the recommendation of the committee that is being drafted into the budget reconciliation bill.
Okay. Senator Steiner-Hayward, did you want to follow up, and I'll go back to Representative.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate all the concerns, and I would just present my thoughts in a slightly different analogy. For those of you who sit on the General Government Subcommittee, you know that we have spent an inordinate amount of time over the past 4 years dealing with the Department of Revenue core system replacement. The cost for that replacement includes not only the actual software that's being installed, but also the project management necessary to do it properly and to ultimately save the state money by making sure that it goes the way it's supposed to, and also the quality assurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, not to put too fine a point on it, but you can't do enormous projects like this or run a grant program, as Senator Devlin said, without making sure that you're doing it right. And I think the last thing we want is to have these really important funds be used for projects that don't meet the criteria the legislature established when we authorized their issuance. I would also make the analogy to a charitable fund, right? When one gives money to a charity, one expects that a reasonable percentage of it will go toward the administration of that charity, whether those are grants, programs, or direct aid to individuals in need. We watch those. We make sure that we contribute to charities that have reasonable administrative expenses and not ridiculous ones. I would propose that perhaps, in addition to the point that Mr. Bender makes about the legislative authorization of the actual budget, that it would be not unreasonable to put a budget note in asking them to come back and report on it to the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee so that we have some assurances about what percentage of the funds are being expended. My sense from talking with others about this issue is that it's going to be pretty small, but it's appropriate for us to ask for some clear reporting on that, separate from the monstrous budgets that we have to approve biennially.
Okay. Representative Whitsitt, then Senator Whitsitt.
We look at page 2 of the bill, section 2, 5A, quote, plan and implement seismic rehabilitation includes A, surveying and conducting engineering evaluations of the need for seismic rehabilitation, and B, paying costs of personnel, advisors, equipment, supplies, and services that are reasonably necessary to develop and carry out the seismic rehabilitation grant program described. My issue is with B. I believe we need the surveying and conducting engineering evaluations, but this is broken into two parts as I read this, and the vagueness comes in with personnel, advisors, supplies. What is all that stuff? Because as I read this, maybe I'm wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But the surveying and conducting engineering evaluations are separated out. So I view B as an administrative thing that doesn't really have to do with the engineering part of it and the evaluation part. So correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Representative, I would not correct you. I think that the language in paragraph B that you've identified and mentioned is the language that would clarify that the bond proceeds could be used at the agency level. The agency is not performing surveying services. They are receiving applications for projects. The paragraph B would be the language under which the legislature could choose to allow bond proceeds to finance agency administrative costs.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. With respect to my colleague, gifts to charities do not require debt service payments for 25 years, and they're generally not made with other people's money. But the comment I wanted to make was, Mr. Co-Chair, I don't think that bad precedent should dictate current policy, even if we've done it before. And I'm not sure, you know, given the structure of this bill, that we've actually done this before, actually called out that you can use this money for administrative purposes for an agency. So I'll be a no.
Any additional? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to associate with the comments of my co-chair from the General Government Subcommittee. I want to support this. Is there any way that we could ask the agency to come back to the Subcommittee on Economic Development and Transportation and report on this?
Absolutely. Representative Smith, and I know that this will not suffice for some members of the committee, while another member was making those comments, my good co-chair to my left was making notes for a budget note. He often does this whenever any request comes in for more funding also. Well, so.
And I share with you. I mean, I still hold tight to the sources and uses statement I made, but at the same time, the co-chair raised a good point in that you have to have dollars to implement a program. What does make me nervous is that we didn't cap it, but I also have a lot of faith in Mr. Bender and the subcommittee, and if we could just have them come back and report on how these dollars were used to make sure it's proportional to what the real need is, to me, that seems logical.
Additional questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I do appreciate the discussion this morning. Just for purposes of the record, I may have transposed my XIs and IXs in making this report this morning, and I think I should have referenced Article 11 MNNQ bonds this morning rather than 9.
My co-chair caught that, actually.
Any additional comments? Okay. We will try first just to do no objections, and we'll see how many we have, and then I'll go to a roll call if I need it. Objections to the motion before the committee. I have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Could you misrecognize him to speak without the names?
Oh, yeah, I can speak the names. Representative Whitson. Whitsitt, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Girard, and Senator Thompson. Motion carries. We'll go on to the next item. Department of Geology and Mineral Industries Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you again, Mr. Co-Chair. On February 11th, the Natural Resources Subcommittee voted to recommend approval of a federal grant application by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration in the amount of $436,255 to fund the Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program. The focus of this grant includes continuing work on tsunami-related activities, including education, outreach, modeling, and mapping along the coastal regions in Oregon. The Department has successfully applied for this competitive grant for several years. There is no state match and no additional positions or FTE are required. The grant applications are due May 27th. Notification of awards is expected in August, and the term of the grant would be September 2016 to August 2018. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Hearing none, motion carries.
open work session, Oregon Health Authority, sodium reduction. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On February 15th, the Human Services Subcommittee voted to recommend approval of a federal grant application from the Oregon Health Authority to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the amount of $500,000 per year for 5 years to reduce sodium intake. The purpose of the grant is to implement strategies to reduce the consumption of sodium. The agency plans to collaborate with the Oregon Department of Education, the Oregon State Hospital, and the Department of Corrections to reduce sodium levels in the food service choices in schools, prisons, and the Oregon State Hospital. They intend to do this through better implementation of food services guidelines that include sodium, focusing on procurement of lower sodium items and improved food preparation practices to reduce sodium in meals. In addition, Public Health and Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center will work with partners, including food manufacturers and distributors, to develop and implement strategies to reduce sodium in processed and prepared foods. No state matching funds are required for the grant. The agency does not expect to need any new positions. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee.
Quick comment?
Yes.
Don't salt your food.
Senator Biggs, I no longer put butter on popcorn. I put salt because...
Don't do that.
You're saying that in committee with two
Don't
physicians
do
on it?
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so what's in with...
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs. Will the $2.5 million be used by the Public Health and Oregon University System, and will they be contracting out any of that work? And if so, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest as I may bid for the contract.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I do not specifically know how they intend to distribute the money and if part of it will be by contract.
So should I declare?
No.
If you'd like to, go ahead. Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Go on to the Oregon Health Authority Rural Hospital Transformation Center Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On February 17th, the Human Services Subcommittee voted to recommend acknowledging receipt of a report from the Oregon Health Authority on recommendations for investments in rural hospital transformation and sustainability. As required by budget note, the Oregon Health Authority engaged stakeholders in a work group. Members represented 13 small rural hospitals, the Oregon Association of Hospital and Health Systems, the Office of Rural Health at OHSU, and OHA staff. Four recommendations were adopted by the group, a total cost of $10 million over 3 years as directed by the budget note. Recommendations include the following: establish a transitional post-acute care program in lower volume critical access hospitals. High acuity patients would be transferred from large hospitals to their local hospitals for post-acute care, freeing up space in large hospitals as well as supporting the small rural hospitals. And rather importantly, it's not a pony, allows people from small rural areas to go back to their own community to complete their transition to outpatient services and to be with family and friends as they go through it. Support the Graduate Medical Education Consortium to increase residency in rural Oregon, which helps recruit primary care physicians and nurse practitioners to the area. Establish virtual clinics in rural communities with acute primary care shortages in order to extend service hours and broaden geographic reach. And provide a small amount of money for executive leaders within all rural healthcare settings on population health and best practices. This group did a really good job of this. And I feel in some way, since this money is coming from the provider assessment, not from general funds, that it's the proper place to take it. I would recommend this program be continued after the 3 years in some way, shape, or form. And the provider assessment is an excellent place to draw this money from. It's appropriate to do so. Especially want to thank Representative McLean and Representative Hayden. They are the ones that helped bring this forward. And I kind of feel this is a promise that we made to them. And I hope they accept this as a promise that was kept. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is really important for rural Oregon, so I want to thank the two of you for allowing this to come forward. Very, very important. And I also want to acknowledge the good work of Representative Hayden on this and Representative McLean and Senator Bates. Again, my good co-chair over there for helping with this. This is really important. The notion that folks can go to the larger hospitals, get the help they need, but be able to return back to their home, that's just critical, and it's important. And you know, the one comment I want to share in addition to the previous ones, is I really hope the Oregon Health Authority follows through with this implementation and make sure that that $10 million is used for these purposes. And as the Senator shared also in his pony, that we're able to continue this into the future. And so good job, everyone. Representative Hayden, really appreciate your work on this.
Yes. Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward.
I know. I'm sorry, the long name. The one other point, first of all, thank you to my good co-chair for the kind words and to everybody who worked on this. The one piece of this that I would really like to draw attention to, in addition, is the part about funding for graduate medical education. Oregon has more graduates of our two medical schools who want to do family medicine residencies in Oregon than we have residency slots available to them. And there are a lot of slots, hospitals in Oregon that could easily establish family medicine training programs. Family physicians are the doctors who serve our rural communities and our urban communities, but in particular rural communities. And we know that doctors tend to practice within 50 to 100 miles of where they train. So the more people we can train here, the better. Federal funding of graduate medical education is Byzantine, to use a polite word, and the state has a real role in changing our ability to fund these programs, and I'm very excited about this aspect, among others, of this proposal.
Additional discussion? Yes, Representative McClain.
Thank you. I wanted to thank Senator Bates publicly for his work and our co-chairs for making the commitment that we all made happen, because I know there are many more asks than there are pots of money, and it's very important, but I don't think this would be here today helping our rural hospitals if it wasn't for Senator Bates, so thank you, sir.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. I will go on to Housing and Community Services Department, Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Colleagues, on February the 9th, the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommended acknowledging receipt of a report from Housing and Community Services Department and the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. Housing was directed via budget note to report to the February 2016 Legislative Assembly on the current financial status of the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service and how it compares to similar entities in other states. The agency was further directed to develop a plan for fiscal sustainability absent continued subsidy from housing and recommendations for alternative administrative models for the commission. The commission serves as applicant and administrative entity for federal VISTA and AmeriCorps grants on behalf of local agencies, including cities and not-for-profits. The commission also administers funds to local court-appointed special advocates programs pursuant to population and funding formulas. This report chronicles the history of volunteer coordination efforts and notes that appropriate administrative models have been studied before. Housing received a one-time $250,000 general fund appropriation specifically for support of the commission, and estimates now that the cost to continue providing services to the commission at the current service level is $492,258. The commission's preference is to become an independent state agency, a move that would necessitate additional staff and more funding to ensure the commission's capacity to meet basic financial reporting standards and operational sufficiency. If the commission were relocated to another agency, additional investment would still be needed to maintain existing operations, as the commission would still have expenses related to its new host for overhead and shared client services. Should the legislature determine that additional funding cannot be accommodated, the option exists to dismantle the commission, which would result in the loss of approximately $6.6 million in federal grants, attendant local match, and post-service education awards for volunteers. A new administrative entity would also be needed to house court-appointed special advocates program. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report. But colleagues, in case it is not completely obvious in this pony, and for those that weren't there, it might not be, fundamentally, we're selling below cost and making it up in volume. This is an agency that has huge costs to administer pass-through federal money. Can't continue to be subsidized by housing, which is struggling to provide basic housing for Oregonians. They have done a lengthy report about the various options of where the commission might be housed, but the question still remains is, what's the legislative commitment in terms of additional funds to support these pass-through federal grants that place volunteers in a variety of not-for-profits and local municipal governments? Did that answer your question, Doctor?
Mostly. I think I'll just pass on saying anything else.
Yes, a Senator, a Representative Whitson.
Sitting on the committee, there was, I thought, great confusion in the presentation. I have a hard time seeing why CASA is part of this. I'd like to see CASA outside of this and this somewhere else. And I know that's all policy stuff, but I would just like to say, if anyone else, Senator Hansel and Senator Johnson, they were there, it was extremely confusing.
If I may respond. I think that there is genuine high regard for the court-appointed special advocates program, and there are many of us on this panel that either raise money for them or are advocates in our own communities for CASA. CASA ended up here by default. I think there still is a very aggressive effort to find a new and more suitable home for court-appointed special advocates. So that's one of a series of problems with this particular agency.
Okay. Additional. I will tell you that we have struggled for years about where to place CASA. If Darren is listening, perhaps the governor's office. That's an inside.
The general government subcommittee would not appreciate that.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Okay. Any objection? No objections. Motion carries. Department of Human Services Program Sustainability, Senator Bates.
Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this pony.
You're the chair of the subcommittee.
Sometimes you have to be careful for what you ask. On February 17th, the Human Services Subcommittee voted to recommend acknowledging receipt of a report from the Department of Human Services on program sustainability for the Aging and People with Disabilities and the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities programs. The report, required by a budget note, was in response to legislative concerns about budget growth and increase in both caseload and costs per case. To support the development of independent and unbiased options, DHS used an external consultant. The final report, produced by the Lewin Group, was received on February 10, 2016, and identifies potential strategies for bending the cost curve in these programs. These primarily revolve around changing eligibility, modifying services, and increasing participate cost share. Stakeholder input was included in the report. While they acknowledge that the project program costs are unsustainable, there are varying perspectives on how best to deal with the costs. The subcommittee expressed frustration with the limited amount of modeling and concrete options presented in the report. Lewin and DHS indicated this was primarily due to time and data constraints. The subcommittee will continue to press DHS for policy and program change options discreet enough to be fully vetted and priced for potential budget action in the 2017 legislative session. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends acknowledged receipt of the report. I really don't know where to start on this issue, but I'll make a stab at it. First, I want to thank the members of the committee who met on multiple times with the department in the evenings. So we had to avoid quorum, so they came in for 2 or 3 hours of conversations. Most of us probably spent 10 to 15 hours looking at this issue and talking to everyone involved in it. Senator Whitsitt was kind enough to come to one of our committees and to be part of that discussion. This is a huge problem. On a fiscal basis, these are hundreds of millions of dollars we're talking about here. It's a very complex situation. We opened up what's called a K-2 waiver for an extra 6% match by the federal government. The program's gone way past what we gained, that 6%. The program was not well administered when it came in. Too many people, frankly, I believe were let in, although the Affordable Care Act did affect that. The cost per case has shot out of control and needs to be brought back under control. the options given to us were really not very helpful, frankly. And we're going to have to continue this discussion in the interim. I expect and hope that when we come back for our next legislative days, we'll have more concrete discussions about what we need to change and start bringing the program under control. Temporarily, the program is covered. We've got to cover this budget, as the co-chairs know. But ultimately, come back in 17, we've got to be ready to fix this program and bring it under control. These people we're dealing with are the most vulnerable people in our population, and we need to take care of them in a thoughtful and careful way, but not at this level. And I'm trying to be thoughtful and careful for the people involved. Please, you know, I'm going to talk about the people we're helping, but at the same time, remember that this has to be changed. I believe that the department basically needs cover to make those changes from the legislature and very precise directions from us for the changes that have to be made. And it's going to be very difficult. I think it can be done. We expect more from the department in the next 60 to 90 days. We'll continue to meet with them and try to start bending the cost curve, not 18 months from now, but over the next 5 or 6 months, the cost curve isn't going to be so tough to deal with in 17. One of the options on the table, which we're looking at, is to drop the K2 waiver and drop back to where we were, which would be pretty draconian if we did that. So it's a very difficult situation. Unexpected consequences from trying to do the right thing, but very difficult. And at this point, I've got to tell you that we've not been very successful in doing what we should have done. We're going to work very hard over the next 2 or 3 months. Hopefully, the next time I report to this group, I'll have better news for you.
Good Dr. Bates has made a pretty good stab at this. What I wanted to add to it, that even the dismal Lewin report is incomplete at best. February 2nd, 2016 report from DHS to LFO highlights the cost of the recent Senate Bill 1532 minimum wage bill. Their report made the 2nd of February indicates that the 2017-19 biennial cost of that wage increase will be $58 million for just those two divisions of DHS. That's $36.5 million for APD and $21.7 for IDD. $18 million of that is general fund. Even that doesn't really grasp the problem. They did not calculate the enormous additional cost, potential cost, of compression in that workforce. We can expect that the next collective bargaining process, the union leaders will come in and ask for an equal percentage across the board increase in wages and probably receive it. That will dwarf $58 million. In addition to that, the Lewin group did not look into or did not calculate the roughly 30% increase in public employee compensation is already negotiated over the next 4 years, nor did they look they calculate the full cost of the PERS increases over the next 4 years. So, Mr. Co-Chairs, I mean, we appear to be putting on an innocent face and whistling past the graveyard here.
Additional discussion.
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't normally ever do this, but I'm going to be voting no on this, because until we start, as our good senator just talked about, until we look at PERS, until we look at compression, we are not meeting the demands of any good balanced budget process. It's going to leave us in the hole. We're going to continue to come back during when we don't have a session to e-board to take care of some of these, and I just have a problem with it, and this is the way I'm protesting this morning. And I'm not going to bang on the walls with my shoes.
Okay. It's actually the desk. It's supposed to bang on the desk with your shoes.
Demonstrators yesterday. He's talking about yesterday.
Oh, the hotel. Not in the
kitchen. You're in a different decade.
Not in the 60s here, Senator. Not any longer.
I'm going to age myself here.
A lot of people don't know about that.
I was going to say.
Nikita Khrushchev was in the rock group.
Who else did we have? The only thing I would say, and be very careful saying this, is that the budget note underlying this was a budget note that, as its premise, asked the agency to look at controlling costs, not down to like minuscule levels, but down to a 10% growth in costs. And if costs are in the 15, 16, 17, 18% level, there is no way that that is sustainable. And there are problems, quite a number of problems, and there's literally a dichotomy in between discussions of the minimum wage and some of the other discussions I hear in this building. Because one of the things the co-chairs have constantly heard about is they want more compensation for DSPs, direct service providers. Heard that from members across both aisles. DSPs are underpaid. We need more money for that. Well, DSPs are actually one of the largest blocks that will be impacted by the minimum wage. So that portion of the cost, if you want to do it and increase those wages, is going to be a factor in this regardless of the minimum wage. But there are just so many other costs coming to bear. And as we all know on this committee, costs that grow at unsustainable levels in one area of the budget, the only area that they come from is other areas of the budget. So somebody in need from a standpoint in human services, there's still a child in need of proper education in our public schools. There's still people out there that are victims of crime that still need assistance there. So I think there's got to be a balance in this, but costs that are at this level are clearly not sustainable. And while I may not agree with everything that Senator Witz had said, I do think that the situation is going to be very difficult to address. Okay, we're accepting a report.
Cheery note.
Mr. Co-Chair, I could ask you what part you disagree with.
Okay. We're accepting a report. There's a motion on the floor. Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion on the floor? Oh, okay. Where are you? Give me your numbers.
Saves the day.
Are you okay?
Okay, Representative Witsit, Representative McLean, Representative Wisnett, Representative Huffman, Representative Comp, and Senator Witsit. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Are we one short?
I will change my vote.
All right.
She's giving
some
a protest.
Protest.
Oh, jeez. Well, Senator Thompson, I could have a lot of others.
Representative Comp has changed her vote. Motion carries. Okay, we will go on to the Judicial Department, Justice for Families, Representative Rayfield.
February 17th, the Public Safety Subcommittee voted to recommend retroactive approval of the submission of a federal grant application by the Oregon Judicial Department to the U.S. Department of Justice for a Justice for Families grant in the amount up to $700,000. The grant will be used to approve responses in judicial proceedings that involve families with a history of domestic or dating violence, sexual assault, stalking, or child abuse. Grant monies would be used to support two agency positions, to fund training, and to fund grants to counties to address identified needs. The grants would be distributed to support circuit courts and class of Jackson, Lincoln, Multnomah, and Umatilla counties, and to support the Klamath tribes. There are no matching funds or maintenance of effort requirements associated with the Justice for Families grant. The grant application was due when the legislature was not in session to consider a request for authorization to apply. OJD provided the required 10-day notice to co-chairs of the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means prior to submitting the grant application. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Okay, discussion. Senator Johnson.
I still don't understand what the money's going to be used for. It's going to hire a couple of people, train them, and then fund grants to counties to address identified needs. What are the what needs?
What the agency? What the LFO? Who are you talking
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, my name is David Moon. I'm the Director of the Business and Fiscal Services of the Oregon Judicial Department. The grant, as we see it, would be to identify needs and then work with our communities to identify possible solutions for those types of domestic violence, sexual violence, dating, stalking, etc.
Yes. I understand what those words mean, but I don't understand identify the needs. In every community, I'm sure that there are instances of sexual violence, stalking, child abuse. What are you going to do with the money? I mean, do you give it to the women's shelter? I just don't understand how $700,000 is going to get spent beyond hiring and training two people. And telling me you're identifying the needs isn't helpful. I want to know some meat. What are you going to do?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I think that that is going to be the effort that is taken undertaken in the community. I can get you a better response, but that is the first thing we're going to do is look at the community, what it provides, what we can do to improve it, and then make those improvements. So the first step is to say, what would we do? And then try and do it. But I'll get you a better answer from the experts who put together the grant.
Yes. Here was my understanding of it. We were in the committee and talked about it afterwards. And I did do a little cross-checking in my county on this, our county. Some of these cases are very, very difficult. These are child abuse cases that were there's been sexual molestation in a family and things of that nature. Some of the bigger counties are used to prosecuting this and have done these cases a lot and have the expertise for it. Some of the smaller counties, and correct me if I'm wrong here, don't really have that expertise. They just aren't big enough to do it. So a smaller county like Josephine or Jackson, maybe some eastern counties, would need help from the department in a particular case they could call. So we got this case. How do we proceed to go after, let's say, the wrongdoer and support the family? And how do you get the right information from the child? All these things that have to happen, these very sensitive and difficult cases. And some of the smaller counties just don't have the expertise to do that. And that's my understanding of what this is supposed to do in a very specific way. Now, if that's not the case, please tell me that I didn't get it right.
Then why is Multnomah in the list?
Please tell me I didn't get it right.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Bates is correct.
Senator Bates is correct.
And Multnomah began an effort a few years ago with federal money. They've done some good things, and this would assist them in continuing those efforts. That's why they're involved.
Yes, Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's my understanding this grant is for $700,000 for 36 months, 3 years. We're going to employ two people for 3 years, and according to DAS, the average compensation for a state employee now is $90,000, $91,000. So if you do the simple math, $540,000 of the $700,000 is going to go to the two employees. And then there's going to be training, but if they didn't spend any money on the training at all and divided the money equally among the other the six participants, it would be $9,000 a year. So to directly to Senator Johnson's concern, there's not going to be enough money to make any difference.
Any additional discussion?
I'd make a comment. Again, tracking back to what Senator Bates was talking about, yes, the majority of the funds do go to the positions, but the positions are what provides the counsel and the expertise to the counties who are struggling through the cases that they're facing. So to me, it does not seem unreasonable to fund the positions, the people that have the expertise to offer counsel to the counties who are confronting the issues.
Yes, Representative Whitson.
You mentioned the Clinch County is the only Klamath tribes. So do the citizens of Klamath County who have a problem not get taken care of under this? It's only for the tribes then in Klamath County? because it says Klamath County. It's a bunch of counties, and then it says the Klamath tribes, not Klamath County. So I was wondering why tribes were separated out from the counties when everybody else, all the other counties, it's for everybody in the county, because there are tribes in other counties. I'm just confused what that's about.
Do you have a response?
Brief response, Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Whitsitt. When we saw that there was an opportunity to apply for federal money, we asked the circuit courts to work with their communities to find out which communities would be interested in participating in possible grant. Now, some of these funds would be available, as was explained, as expertise resources within the department that we could apply to anyone in the whole state. We would be providing training to judges, training to staff. That kind of information would be available. So it would benefit the whole state, every citizen. Specific communities asked to participate at a higher level, and the Klamath tribe would be one of those communities that said they would have an interest in participating in this work. So you are correct in stating the community or county circuit court of Klamath didn't come forward and say they were going to put resources to doing this. The tribe did.
So it will only be for tribal issues in Klamath County, not regular non-sovereign
citizens. Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Wixit, there will be benefit or resources available to the Klamath County, but there will be a special or more focused effort for the tribe as well.
Additional discussion. This is approval of a grant. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Discussion? No objections. Motion carries. Go on to the Department of Revenue, Collections and Cash Management, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On February 10th, the General Government Subcommittee voted to recommend acknowledging receipt of a report from the Department of Revenue on collections and cash management. The department's report reviewed enterprise cash management practices, debt cancellation and write-off practices, audit selection processes, and the process for non-tax debt owed the state. While the report contained good information, one theme became apparent. The automation associated with the core systems replacement project and high-speed scanners in the agency's processing center, once fully implemented, should result in significant improvements to cash processing, audit selection, and collection activities. The general government recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During that subcommittee hearing, I asked the Department of Revenue to explain what occurred regarding their failure to audit discounted business energy tax credit sales for capital gains taxes. The agency response was beyond troubling, and if anyone's interested, I've made copies for everyone here if they'd like to see them. The IRS issued an advisory letter in 2011 concluding that the sale of non-refundable tax credits resulted in both state and federal taxable capital gains for the seller. The department alleges it informed legislative revenue of that IRS advisory, and I just got this yesterday, I haven't been able to check with Mr. Warner. Rather than implementing the advisory, department staff reached out to the Governor Kitzhaber's office. The department alleges that LRO authorized a bill draft for the 2013 legislative session that would have allowed a subtraction from Oregon income for the capital gain reported on the federal return. The department then instructed its audit program to hold off on undertaking an audit project to capture the capital gains tax owed. The reasoning appeared to be that the bill effectively authorized by LRO might become law. So instead of enforcing the law, they were thinking about what might be the law. But anyway, because the department only audits tax returns for the past 3 years, this process resulted in a moratorium on Betsy capital gain audit projects for about 18 months. Department auditors have told me and others that they believe the moratorium resulted in between $18 and $22 million in potential Betsy capital gain taxes not being collected, an actual potential loss of about $20 million in state revenue. So if anybody wants to see their answer to the question, it's right here.
copies.
Yeah.
Okay, any additional discussion of the motion before the committee? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries.
One more to go.
That's it.
Okay, that holds that work session, open a work session. The last one passed. Department of Transportation Commercial Driver Licensing Program, Senator Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On February 16th, the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee voted to recommend approval of a federal grant application by the Department of Transportation to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration for $1.1 million to enhance compliance with the Federal Commercial Driver License Program. Commercial Driver's License Program Implementation Grant provides financial assistance to states to enable them to comply with regulations governing the Commercial Driver License Program, a federal program that is administered by states. ODOT plans to use the grant funds on computer programming needed to comply with a recent rule change that requires electronic transmission of commercial driver license records to the federal government. No state matching funds are required. If awarded, ODOT may return to the legislature with a request for additional federal funds expenditure limitation. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Johnson.
I'm going to support the motion, but this was an issue that came up in committee, and I think it warrants sharing with the entire Ways and Means. In 2015, the Oregon Department of Transportation was informed that they needed to replace their aging hardware and software solutions with modern business and information platforms, and this motion speaks to that. As such, they were appropriated $30.4 million. In 2005, Congress passed the Real ID Act, which establishes new rules necessary for American citizens to board aircraft and gain access to federal buildings and facilities. ODOT and DMV are currently not in compliance with that 2005 Act. One major reason is that the system is not compatible with Real ID. My concern is that we are going to come to a point in the not distant future where our Oregon identification is no longer accessible, adequate to access federal facilities. And I am hopeful that the co-chairs might entertain via budget note some sense of urgency to ODOT. We were told in committee that failure to move on this commercial driver's license program could cost us an enormous amount of federal money. This is not the first time that we found ourselves in the thrall of the federal government saying they're going to cut off our funds if we don't act, but we now have driver's licenses that may no longer be acceptable after a date in the not distant future. And I think the legislature deserves a report from ODOT as to the status. I mean, we've got people that work in, on the Hanford Reservation, they won't be able to get in there.
Okay. Senator Hanson.
If I may follow up, Mr. Co-Chair, on that Real ID issue, what Senator Johnson has brought forward, not only will we not have access to federal facilities, we will not be able to board airplanes using only the driver's license. And that's going to put a tremendous burden. I think 15 states up to this point have complied. I believe the extension is next fall. It's either 16 or 17, and it runs out. And if we don't do something now or begin to work that, Oregonians aren't going to be able to fly either internationally or domestically. And I would appreciate if we would have a budget note that when ODOT buys this new equipment, that it is Real ID compliant, that they can use the software to bring us into compliance at the appropriate time. Otherwise, they could buy a whole new system, not address the Real ID, then be back to us for another millions of dollars to have the software to do Real ID. There's no reason why we can't have that as a part of the proposal, that we buy software that will handle Real ID compliance. And it's a waste of money if we buy a system that does not do that. And it'll put a tremendous burden on us and a huge expense down the road. So if we just have that as to go out and get new software and have that budget note that it will be Real ID compliant as one of the parameters or one of the specifics, it'll serve us very well down the future. Otherwise, we're going to have a disaster.
In addition to the airports, Coast Guard facilities, small fisheries, or military bases, which we have in my district, a very large one, which has a large civilian component that has to get on the base every day, and there's a base up in Portland, too, for National Guard. We're just simply not going to be able to, by federal regulations, get on those bases. So it's hugely important that we be aligned with the ID.
Mr. Co-Chair, may I add one other thing? The only document that will allow us access to what we now use our driver's license for would be a passport. And most Oregonians, or many Oregonians, don't have access to passports. My wife is just renewing hers. It's $110. So it's going to be, and it's, I don't know, a six-month wait right now. So it's, we've got to do it on the driver's license, because if we don't, then we're really going to be in problem.
Any additional discussion? Senator Johnson and Representative Gomber, see if there is the ability to get a budget note, and the budget note doesn't have to be perfect. Could you approach the co-chairs in the next few days with a budget note? Because we only have a few days for budget notes. So, and any additional discussion of the motion before us? Any objection to the motion before us? Hearing none, motion carries. Colleagues, this concludes our work for today. There will be two Ways and Means Committee meetings next week at least. The subcommittees are supposed to conclude their work next week. This committee is supposed to conclude its work next week. Also, on budget notes, since we ended on budget notes, we have had some requests for budget notes. We don't know which ones will go in. But keep in mind that nobody has requested this on this committee. But you cannot do a budget note to implement a bill that didn't pass. That's not an appropriate use for a budget note. A budget note does not have any force of law. And also, this is not a member of this committee. You cannot make an appropriation in a budget note.
So, folks, so. For the schedule next week, please stay flexible. We might be having an evening hearing next week if we need to, so please stay flexible.
Do you know what day we'll be meeting next?
Tuesday.
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 8:30.
Probably later in the day.
Okay.
Early, late afternoon or early evening. We don't know.
So in other words, I should be
taking tools away from it. I can't appropriate.